So we're on the top of Chaf Gimel Lamed Beis, but we need to do just a very quick Chazara of Chaf Gimel Lamed Aleph, just to make sure we're on the same page. So the Gemara over there, on Chaf Gimel Lamed Aleph, said, what if you want to go ahead and make an animal as the wall of your sukkah? So there, Rabbi Meir said what? Anybody remember? Anything that's alive, you're not allowed to make it as a dofen for sukkah or many other things as well. And the question was, why? And Rabbi Huda argues Rabbi Meir and says that there's nothing wrong with using an animal for your wall. So Gemara asks, my time with Rabbi Meir, and as machlokes between Abaye and Rabbi Zeira. Abaye thinks that the reason why Rabbi Meir will not allow an animal for a wall is why? Because it might croak. Even if it's not a frog, it might croak. And we're afraid, we're choshesh in lemisa, apparently afraid that it's going to die. And Rabbi Zeira says that's not the issue. The issue is that it might
run away.
So the Gemara gets into a few different interesting permutations of this. Elephants that are tied up, elephants that are not tied up. All kinds of interesting permutations. And at the end of the day, we are definitely concerned that an animal will run away. But what happens if it is tied up? Is that sufficient or not? So if you're afraid it's going to die, so then tying it up is not sufficient because it may die and you're not going to have a large enough animal unless it's an elephant. And if you hold that we're not choshesh for misa, it's just not something we anticipate, so then it's fine as long as it's tied up, because the assumption is it's not going to die. I might crouch down, may decide to sit. So the Gemara says, you're right, that's going to be a problem, so we'll have to string it up. So we have our animal now, according to everybody, seemingly strung up so that it cannot run away, and it also cannot sit down. So then, what's the choshesh in lemisa? Like, everyone should agree now, there's nothing wrong, well, nothing could possibly be problematic. The Gemara says no, because if it dies, so then it may minimize the shear or something like that. You may not be paying attention. So if you're choshesh lemisa, the animal may slouch over when it dies after it's strung up, and therefore we are concerned. And according to the Ma'adamar, it says we're not choshesh lemisa, according to Rizera, so then we're not concerned for that. And we don't assume it's going to die. Once you string it up, it's not going to run away, and it can't even crouch down, so you're good to go. So that's where all this ends up. That would be the nafka mina in that case. So all of that is the discussion in Rabbi Meir's opinion. Abaye thinks that Rabbi Meir is concerned the animal will die, and Rabbi Zeira thinks that the only concern is that it might run away, but there's no concern for misa. So the top of Chachim Amabei is, it says, "Mi Amar Abaye Rimir Chayish Lamisa." Did Abaye really say that Rabbi Meir is Chayish Lamisa? Now, I would have said, yeah, because that's what it said he said on the previous Amar. So why are we questioning what Abaye said Rabbi Meir says?
Because maybe people also heard different things. Because they're not talking to each other. It's like all letters and like previous. So like, maybe like someone else in a different part of the world had some.
So that's what it comes out, is that it seems like we have other statements of Abaye that contradict that. So maybe something went wrong here in our chain. Maybe there is a problem in the Masara over here. Is it possible that Abaye really said Rabbi Meir is Choshesh Lemisa? The only reason this is a little confusing is because there's a machlokas about Rabbi Meir. And now we have a discussion over what Abaye really said about Rabbi Meir. You with me? So you gotta just keep in mind that there's like a...
The question is, what did Rabbi Meir say? We know what Rabbi Meir said. He said, no use animal for wall. That is not under discussion. The question is, why? Not. So there comes along Abaye, and he says, because Rabbi Meir is choshesh lemisa, he's concerned that it's going to die. That's what Abaye said. Now, there is a Rabbi Zeira who thinks that that's not the reason. But we'll disregard Rabbi Zeira. Now we're going to focus, we're going to zero in on Abaye. So Abaye says that the reason why Rabbi Meir said, no use animal for a wall, is because Rabbi Meir is afraid that the animal is going to die. And even though it's strung up, and in between its legs, we filled it in with palm leaves, so there's no spaces, we did everything we could. Yeah, I said yesterday, it doesn't really seem like the way to go, but But as a theoretical structure anyway, if it does die, then it's going to go, ugh.
How many?
If it's lovewood to the schach, then it won't be lovewood anymore.
It's
very unusual.
Are most animals 10 to 12 not?
An elephant is.
Probably not. I don't know about most animals, but you'd have to get one that is.
What's something? I obviously
a cow, you know, the animals that don't like to move a lot. You put enough food in front of them and they'll stay there, you know? An elephant, if you happen to have one. Most people don't have elephants, probably.
Yeah,
but the common animal would probably be a cow.
It's like so expensive to like have an elephant and then stuff the elephant so that he actually becomes a wall. Like not stuff the elephant himself, but underneath the elephant.
Right. I imagine that the elephant was the exception. That's why the Gemara brings up, well, what about an elephant? Because it wasn't usually happening with elephants. It wasn't usually happening with any of them. But it wouldn't normally happen with an elephant because most people didn't have elephants. But a lot of people probably had cows and oxen and things like that, which probably didn't move that much.
People actually did.
I don't know if anybody ever
did this. Rich people did this to show off their wall. Like, oh, look, instead of having, like, you know.
No, poor people did it because all they had was a cow and like, two walls, and they couldn't afford the rest of the sukkah, maybe.
What about humans as your wall?
How
simplistic that sounds.
Yeah.
Humans?
You like literally land humans.
Because they may not escape because you'll pay them to just stay there?
No, you chain them down.
Like, that's an animal has a mind of its own, but like a human, if you for some reason make it stay, If you for some reason, like, he'll stay there, you know what I mean?
Pay him to your wall?
Yeah.
Maybe you could get your children to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the Gorn never brings that up because it's not possible.
They can't open up their mouths if they're stuck to their noses.
There was a guy, you know, there was a certain father who used to have his children stand in the closet for a while. Guy, okay, go to the closet. It's elevator training. Yeah, didn't go so well. Anyway, okay, so Gorn has this wacky case. And the question is, did Abai really think Rabbi Meir was concerned that we anticipate the animal could die at any time? Really? Rabbi Yehuda lo chayish, and Rabbi Yehuda is not choshesh for Misa. So that's the way that this works. But didn't we learn in Mishnah? Bas Yisrael, what do you mean a Bas Yisrael? Why is she referred to as a Bas Yisrael? It means she's Jewish? No, it means she's a Bas Yisrael and not what?
Not a
Bas Kohen. What's the difference if she's a Bas Yisrael, Bas Kohen? Eating Truma. Because if she's a Bas Kohen and she was eating Truma her whole life, now she gets married to a Kohen, she can continue to eat Truma. What happens if he dies or divorces her or whatever? Can she eat Truma? Yes, she goes back to her father's house, and she trumed her father's house. Right. You know, so that's no, there's not going to be enough kamina. But if she's a Bas Yisrael, then she's never eaten truma her whole life. Now she marries a kohen, she is allowed to eat truma as long as she's married to the kohen. If he dies, so then it depends on whether or not she has a child from him, then there could be situations where she still is allowed to continue to eat truma. But the cases that we're going to be discussing mostly are cases where she doesn't have a child with him, and therefore if he dies or divorces her, she's going to go back to her father's house and she will not be allowed to eat truma. So you have a Bas Yisrael, so her father is a Yisrael, not a Kohen. She nises l'Kohen. And she marries a Kohen. Now she's allowed to eat truma. V'halach b'ayla medinas ayam, he goes away on business or whatever to somewhere far away. So number one, it's going to take a long time to find out how he's doing. And number two, it is possible that it was dangerous or whatever, but apparently it's not so dangerous that we can assume that the guy's dead because he happened to go on a ship. Right? It's not that dangerous. The assumption is not that he's dead. Assumption is he's coming back. But we don't know. We didn't have cell phones or anything else back then. Oichelis v'truma, you don't need to be concerned the husband died, and she's allowed to eat truma. V'cheskas shuhukayam, because there's a chazaka that he is alive. What's a chazaka?
Possession.
It could mean that. Here, what does it mean? There's a chazaka that he's alive.
Or assumption?
Yeah. So it's a status quo. That in halacha, we recognize a situation that exists doesn't change until we can assume that it changed. So anything which can be assumed to continue is assumed to continue, unless there's a reason why we'd expect it not to. Yeah? So he was alive. We have no reason to assume that he's dead, other than the fact that we have no communication with him. He's not going into a war zone. Maybe that would be different. Maybe not. But Gemara says, there's an anonymous Tana here that says, if he goes away to Medinas Ayam, she continues to eat Truma. Now, that's a big deal, right? Because a czar a non-Kohen eats Truma is what? Anybody know? That's a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim. Remember, Max? Nobody should be eating your Truma. A Kohen that has Truma is not allowed to give it to anybody else. It's not allowed to eat it. So that's a big deal. So she is allowed to continue to eat Truma because we have a chazaka that he's alive because he was alive and has no reason to think otherwise. Okay, very nice. Urminan Allah. What's an Urminan? What's Rami? A contradiction. We have a contradiction that we bring on it. Another Mishnah says, there is a Gitech. He got, the husband actually gives her a get. He's a Kohen, and he gives her a physical get. And he says to her, this will be your get. What do you mean, this will be your get? It is a get. Meaning, it will be in effect. It will go into effect. This is something that is very fascinating. When you learn Maseches Gittin, so you learn that a get doesn't mean that she has the document of divorce. Because in addition to the physical document, is that the document isn't necessarily in effect. So it can go into effect based on certain conditions or certain scenarios or whatever. So he can actually give her a get, and she has the physical paper. But it's useless, it's meaningless. Because he says to her, it's only going to be your get, it'll only become effective, sho'achas, literally an hour before, but it means a moment. A moment before, koinem, before, misasi, my death. What's the case? Husband's a kohen, gives his wife an actual get. He says, this will be your get a moment before I die. What in the world's going on here? If he's dead, he's dead. Why does he need to give her a get a moment before he dies for? What a weird thing to do. Why would anybody do this?
Going to war.
What?
They're going to war.
Okay, so why would he do that?
Just because they don't find his body, can find out if he died or not.
So if you don't know he's dead, how do you know he's dead?
That's what he gets for. They don't know, so she's not obligated to anyone.
But it's a shahas kodem misasi. If you don't know if he died, you don't know if she's divorced. The only way this get will ever be effective is what? Is if you know he's dead.
Yeah, but that's why he's...
So what you're thinking is, they used to give a get and say, if I don't return by a certain date, then this will go into effect. Because then the date comes whether he comes back or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why would anybody do this?
If he's
come on, be creative!
He's going somewhere he could die.
But if we don't know he's dead, then it doesn't work. It's useless to us. It only works if we know he died. Yeah.
He doesn't have any children.
Yeah.
So he could avoid his brother having to marry her.
That's right. It's to avoid a case of Yibum or Chalitza, where his brother is nasty or whatever, various permutations of the brother issues. So she's going to have, in this case, assumingly, she doesn't have any children with her husband. And if he dies, she's going to have to do Yibum or Chalitza. He's going to call him, not going to be allowed to do Yibum. So she'll have to do chalitza, and maybe he's going to cause all kinds of problems, and he'll refuse to do chalitza, and then she'll be an aguna for the rest of her life, because she won't be able to marry anybody, because the nasty brother refused to do chalitza with her. That's the case. Okay, but in any case, we don't really care about that. The point is that if the husband who's a kohen says to her, this is your get, sha'achas kodem misasi, a moment before I die, now she's divorced, and she won't have to do yibum, asura lecho betruma miyad, at the moment she receives the get and he walks away and he's out of sight. So then she is asura to eat truma. Why? What are we afraid of? Could be that he is dead. Could be he's dead. And therefore she was divorced a moment before that. And once she's divorced, then she's a Bas Yisrael. So she's not allowed to eat truma. She doesn't have any kids. That's obviously the case because that's the whole reason for this get. So one, the reason I'm saying that is because theoretically she could continue to eat truma if she has a child from that coin. Okay, but in any case, that's a contradiction. No, what's a contradiction? Because the first one says that if a husband goes away to Medina Sayyam, he could be dead at any moment. It is possible, but we don't tell her you're not allowed to eat truma every time your husband goes away on a trip. But if he gives her a get and he says this will be your get a moment before I die, so then she's a surah with truma right away. What's the difference? In both cases, it's just a question of do we assume the guy could die at any moment? So, Mamanavshav, if you assume a guy could die at any moment, so then she should be a surah to eat truma anytime he leaves the house. She should only be allowed to eat truma when he's like in the house, and she can see him. And if you hold that we're not chayshish for Misa, so then who cares? Then why should she be a surah to eat truma once he gives her a get, as soon as he leaves? The significance is the difference is whether he gave her a get or not. How does that make any sense? So the Gemara says that's a contradiction. You can't have it both ways. Either we assume if he's not there, then we have to assume he's dead, or we never assume he's dead until there's a reason to think that. But Omar Abaye, Abaye answered. That's why we're quoting all this. Abaye is trying to resolve the contradiction between these two principles. Two Mishnayos. Like Kasha, it's not a problem. Harabi Meir, the Lechayesh Lamisa. Harabi Huda, the Lechayesh Lamisa. One is Rabbi Meir, who isn't concerned for death, and one is Rabbi Huda, who is concerned for death. So, what happened here? So this is Abaye, saying Rabbi Meir is not concerned for death. He doesn't say, we assume the guy died. So when the Kohen goes away on a trip, she's allowed to continue eat truma, says Abaye, because Rabbi Meir holds we don't assume he's dead. And Rabbi Yehuda says, as soon as the guy walks out of the house, apparently, even though that's not the case that's discussed here, but it sounds like Abaye is insisting that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as soon as the guy leaves the house, she's not allowed to eat truma, because could be he died. Yeah? So what's the problem? The problem is that Abaye is the one that said, why does Rabbi Meir say you can't use an animal for a wool? Because Abaye holds, according to Rabbi Meir, we are concerned the animal may die at any moment. What, animals and people are different? But Rabbi Meir, according to Abaye, Rabbi Meir says we're not concerned that the coin's going to die at any moment. So why are we concerned that the animals could die at any moment, but the husband, we're not concerned he could die at any moment? Why is that? So Gemara just goes on. It says, according to Abaye, Harabi Meir, Delichai Shlemisa, Harabi Huda, Delichai Shlemisa. This Anya, as we learn in Abraisa, Halakiach Yain Mimina Kusim, a guy buys wine from the Kusim. Now, sometimes Kusim in the Gemara it's been edited. It's been censored. And really means Goyim. In this particular case, it actually means Kusim. Who are the Kusim? Anybody know? What? Yeah, who are the Kushites?
They were the
Shomronim. There were these people that lived in Eretz Yisrael. And there was a big disaster happened at a certain time when the lions were like attacking people and devouring them. And apparently it was only people that weren't Jewish. I don't know. So they decided that if they would convert, they would be saved from the lions. So they converted. But it was a big dispute. Did they really convert? They didn't really convert. It was true. It wasn't true because they're only doing it to get out of the lions killing them. So was it a valid conversion? Was it not a valid conversion? Later on in history, they found out that they were still doing Avodah Zarah, and the whole conversion was just a scam, just so that they could try to avoid getting killed by the lions. So they ended up not really being valid. But the Gemara again and again and again comes back to these people called the Kusim, who were makbid about certain things and totally not makbid about other things. Whatever they were makbid on, you can trust them. Whatever they were not makbid on, you cannot trust them. So in this case, we're talking about a case where a person is purchasing wine from the Kusim. It's not a problem, apparently, of Stam Yenam or Yayin Nesech, because apparently we're not concerned that the wine is not kosher because the non-Jews were using it, maybe even using it for other reasons. So it's the Kusim that gets us out of that problem. So the Jew technically is allowed to drink it, but we have a problem because he didn't do any hafrasha, and it's mamash like Erev Shabbos. He didn't separate truma or maaser, anything. So he doesn't have enough time to do it. And are you allowed to do that on Shabbos?
No.
You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos because even though it's not a deraisa, but derabanan, it looks like you're fixing something because you're preparing the food that you should be able to eat it. You're changing its status. So because of that, you're not allowed to be mafresh, trumas, and maestres on Shabbos. So the guy's in a big rush. So what is he going to do to be able to use the wine for Shabbos? He wants to make Kiddush. He wants to drink the wine on Shabbos. So this is the suggestion. Oymer, he should say, Shnei Lugin, two Lugin, Shani Asid Lahafresh, that I'm going to separate Motzei Shabbos, Harei Hein Truma. They'll be Truma. So in other words, he's got this big barrel. And he says, there are going to be two lugin that I'm going to separate for truma later on. But they're there now to be determined which two lugin at a later date. You hear? He's not identifying the two lugin now because it's liquid. You can't do that. It doesn't work. Even by solids, you could say, well, I'll pick later. So to be determined later on, that'll be truma. But I'm identifying it now. It's there, but it won't be specifically identified until I separate it later. But I'm identifying it. It's there now. I'm being mafresh it now. Based on what I decide later will be the actual physical tulugin. That'll be truma. Asara, 10, because that's a tenth, right? So 10%. Maaser Rishon will be Maaser Rishon from what is to be determined later. Tisha, Maaser Sheni. And because once you remove 10%, there's only 90% left, so it'll be 9. So 9 parts will be my Maaser Sheni, again, to be determined. Umechel, and then he is Mechalel, the Maaser Sheni. You remember how this works? Truma goes to the Kohen. Maaser goes to the lady. And there's something called Maaser Sheni. What's Maaser Sheni? Maaser Sheni, you take it, you separate it, you eat it in
Yerushalayim.
Now, it could be that all kinds of things you're going to try to bring to Yerushalayim will spoil by the time you get to Yerushalayim. So you're allowed to redeem it onto money, and then bring the money, and the money you buy food, and you eat it, and the Kedusha transfers. So the whatever you buy in Yerushalayim actually has Kedusha as Maaser Sheni. You have to treat it in a certain way.
Does it have to be that coin, or does it just have to be that amount of money that you use?
No, there's all kinds of tricks that you can do with the pidyon. There's all kinds of things you can do with it. But, so that's what he does. Umeichel means he's mechalel the wine on the coin. So he has his money, has his coins, and he removes the kedusha from the wine, it's now on the coins. So what's present in this barrel now is truma and maaser rishon, but the specific wine that is truma and maaser rishon is to be determined at a later date. But it's technically been separated because it's identified it already in the abstract. So that allows him then to be able to drink it on Shabbos. You got it? Make sense? Yeah? V'shoy simiyad, so you can drink it right away. Divrei Rebbe Meir, that is Rebbe Meir's opinion. What?
What is he drinking right away, and why is that a drink?
Okay, so let's explain it one more time. It's a big barrel, it's filled with wine, and because he purchased it from the Kusim, nothing has been separated that needs to be separated from it. What has to be separated? Shum has to go to the Kohen, Maaser has to go to the Levi, and then Maaser Sheni has to separate to eat in Yerushalayim. The Maaser Sheni we took care of in the sense that he already was mechalel on a coin, so he's not even present in the barrel anymore at all. But what is present in the barrel is Truma and Maaser. Now that's a big problem, because Truma and Maaser, if it's mixed up in your wine, then you're not allowed to drink it unless you're a coin, you know, and you can get away with it. But if you're not, you can't drink it, because it's all mixed up. So in this case, it's not mixed up. He's saying, I am being mafresh, tulugin for Truma, and then a tenth for Maaser. But the specific wine that will be those things is to be determined later. But I'm going to leave over enough. I'll leave over enough that by the time I'm done, I could be all finished everything except for that, or maybe I won't. But I'm leaving over enough that I should be able to give that Motzei Shabbos. But which specific molecules of wine are to be determined?
So it's for sure going to be left over tulugin.
He must leave over. He has to leave over. He's got a big problem. He has to leave over. Okay, but he's planning to leave over. No problem. Good? So that's what Rabbi Meir says. He can drink it right away, because that's considered to be a good hafrasha. Now, you tell me. What might be problematic about that hafrasha? Why might someone disagree and say not allowed to do that? So the practical concern is, well, how do you know that the wine is going to be around by then? Maybe it'll break. Maybe it'll spill out of the barrel, and then you never actually ended up being mafresh. That's a practical concern. The conceptual concern is, are you allowed to do that? You're allowed to say my truma will be to be determined later, and then it'll be determined which molecules it is at a later date. Don't you have to do that ahead of time? Are you allowed to do that? So that's what we call breira. So this is a principle that you will find several times in Shas. Okay. What?
That's a vocab word, breira.
Breira.
Choice.
This is a vocab word. Breira. Choice. Breira nalacha means that the choice will be determined retroactively.
Meaning?
What I do now is determined retroactively from what happens later. That's not so simple that you can do that. So Rabbi Meir obviously says you can. But not everyone agrees about that, as we'll see. You can see how it's complicated, right? Because you're going to give something to the Kohen, but you're going to determine which portion it is later. Maybe you have to identify it now. So if you hold Breira works or Breira's okay to rely on, so okay, it'll be determined later. But if you say ain't Breira, you're not allowed to do that, so then this whole thing is null and void. You just can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. So Rabbi Meir clearly holds Breira is not a problem, and apparently he's not concerned that the barrel is going to break. We just don't have those kinds of practical concerns. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, wow, three great gedolim, oisin, they say that is prohibited. You may not drink it. Now, you may not drink it, or you may not do that. The Gemara doesn't specify. But what's the problem here? And again, the Gemara doesn't spell it out, but this is the end of the Gemara's argument. Are you sure that Rabbi Meir, are you sure that Abaye holds about Rabbi Meir? That Rabbi Meir is Choshei Shlemisa? But Abaye says that Rabbi Meir is the one that allows a woman to continue to eat truma even after her husband leaves. Because Rabbi Meir is not Choshei Shlemisa. And then the Gemara fleshes it out with this case. And if you have a barrel and you want to be able to be mafresh trumas and laishas, utilizing this principle called breira to be determined, so what does Rabbi Meir say about that? You are allowed to do that, you're not allowed to do that. Rabbi Meir says you are allowed to do that. But wait a minute. Why isn't Rabbi Meir concerned that maybe the barrel will break? Apparently, he's not concerned for the possibility of the barrel breaking, just like he's not concerned about the possibility of people dying. So, isn't that true that Abaye holds, Rabbi Meir's opinion is, that we are not concerned with these future possibilities? Rabbi Huda is. So that would be a problem, because I thought we said that Rabbi Meir is concerned for Misa. That's why he won't let you use an animal for the Sukkah wall. So now we have a problem. What did Abaye really say that? Or he didn't really say this? So that's where we're holding in the Gemara. So Gemara says, Ipuch, switch it around. Switch what around? So Rashi points out, what we're switching around is the cases of the women eating truma. Switch around the cases of the women eating truma. So we have three things going on here that we need to keep in our minds. One thing going on here is no animal wool. That's sukkah. Number two is wife eating truma. And number three is the wine barrel. Breira. Those are the three cases. So when it comes to the no animal wool, so what did we say? Abaye says Rabbi Meir holds, you can't use an animal for wool because for our Choshei Shlemisa. When it came to the wife eating truma, Abaye says Rabbi Meir holds that we are not Choshei Shlemisa. And that is parallel to the wine barrel case where Rabbi Meir is not concerned for eventualities like barrel breaking. So number one does not match number two and number three. Comes along the corner and says, Ipuch. Flip it. Flip what? So Rashi explains, it's clear from the Gemara, we're flipping number two. So we didn't know we had a contradiction between two Mishnayos. One Mishnah says the woman can eat truma after the husband leaves, and one Mishnah says the woman cannot eat truma once the husband leaves. One of them holds we're Choshei Shlemisa, and one of them says we're not Choshei Shlemisa, so which one's which? So Gemara says, okay, so flip it around. Rabbi Meir is the one that says we are Choshei for Misa. So what we mean, the remainder says, no animal wool, because we are Choshesh for Misa. The wife eating truma, is she allowed to eat truma? No. Because that would be Rabbi Meir's opinion according to this new version of the Gemara, because we are Choshesh, that he may die. We didn't account for this case yet, because in the wine barrel in Breira, Rabbi Meir clearly says what? That it's mutter to do this. Because we're not concerned for the possibility of the barrel breaking. That's inconsistent. So the Gemara will come back to that.
Woman, why is that? Why is the last one inconsistent with the other one? The idea that he's allowing you now to separate something retroactively.
Kosheish, not kosheish.
Why is the last one not kosheish?
Because he allows you to be mafresh, and he doesn't care that the barrel may break. You'll never actually be able to be mafresh.
But he does. I thought
the Mishnah says you're allowed to be mafresh because the assumption is you'll end up identifying the proper molecules Motzei Shabbos. But if the barrel breaks, you can't do that. And then you ended up eating tevel the whole time. Why are you allowed to do that?
How else would you do if let's say he was Kodeshish that it was going
to
break?
You're just not allowed to do it. You're stuck. You're just not allowed to do it.
So I leave the barrel there and I may break
it. You can't be mafresh it. No, you won't be able to drink it. That's it. You just can't drink from it.
And then if it breaks, you still have a problem.
No, it's not a problem. It's just that you'll lose money. The problem is if you started drinking from the barrel based on your assumption that you'll identify the Truma Meiser Motzei Shabbos, then if you end up not being able to identify the Meiser Motzei Shabbos, you ate tevel. But if I tell you you're not allowed to drink it because you're not allowed to do that, you didn't do anything wrong.
If I drank, let's say I left enough in, like there was even more than enough. I drank like 5 cups right there. Shabbos is going, the barrel breaks.
Yeah.
So
technically speaking, you were never mafresh Truma Meiser now. So that what you drank from the whole time was usher.
From what I was drinking, that wasn't part of it. The truma that I would have separated was in that barrel.
Yeah.
Not from what I drank.
But if it breaks, you never actually identified it. You never actually completed your hafrasha. Since you never completed your hafrasha, you ended up drinking tevel the whole Shabbos. No good. So that's what the Gemara says. So now. The Gemara says, so the top of Chav Dalam and Av. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yisrael, Rishim, and Oisrim. They say you're not allowed to do this whole Breira bit with the barrel. So the Gemara says, no problem, Ipuch. We'll just flip it around. Rabbi Meir is Chayesh Lemisa. Rabbi Yehuda, Loi Chayesh Lemisa. So that's number one and number two. Both are Choshesh. Rabbi Meir is Choshesh in both cases for Misa. Tisanya. And we have a braisa, as we learned in a braisa, asal lebehema doifan lesukkah. If you made an animal a wall for a sukkah, Rabbi Meir poisel, Rabbi Machshir. So now Rabbi Meir is consistent because he says if you want to make an animal for the wall of a sukkah, Rabbi Meir says poisel. That is no good because Rabbi Choshesh that is going to die. Rabbi Machshir says it's fine. So it's Gemara makes it sound like everything's hunky dory, but everything is very much not hunky dory. I had an uncle named Uncle Dory. My great grandfather. Anyway, so there's Choshesh. And Choshesh, but the problem is we're still not consistent with the case of the wine barrel. Why in the world would Rabbi Meir allow you to go ahead and do this Hafrasha Breira shtick if he's always concerned of possibilities? He should be concerned a barrel will break. So Gemara asks this and says, Kashya de Rabbi Meir ad Rabbi Meir. We have a contradiction between two opinions that are clearly of Rabbi Meir. No, this isn't the Kashan Abaye anymore. Now this seems to be a direct contradiction in Rabbi Meir. Amar lecha Rabbi Meir. That means that Rabbi Meir would say to you, because he didn't actually say this. Amar lecha Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir would say to you, Misa shchicha, I hold that death is kamen, b'kias anoid le'shchicha. Barrels breaking is not as common. Or is not common. What do you think? So I would just think of it just for fun like this. There is a chazaka that a person's still alive, right? But I know that, you know, at our age we don't like to think about these things, but isn't it true everyone dies?
Everyone dies.
Do all barrels break?
No.
Right? In other words, a person given enough time will be dead. A barrel given enough time will maybe, you know, rot over time. So there is a certain difference there. That when it comes to a person, it perhaps is more likely that we would be choshesh for misa of a person because we're relying on what principle did we mention in the Gemara? Chazaka. Chazaka we said is a status quo. And I told you the status quo is only as valid as we can assume it didn't change. So the status quo of a barrel is that it's a functional barrel. And the status quo of a human is that he's alive.
What do you mean with the life cycle of a barrel compared to one of a person? It just becomes longer?
Could be. It could be. That's a simpler way to look at it. But it is also true that when it comes to the chazak of a barrel versus a barrel is not going to fall apart. But a person is going to die.
But at a certain point, a barrel won't be using when broken down.
What?
I don't know what I'm saying.
Okay, so I'm just pointing out that there is such a thing as called a reyasa and a chazaka. There is a certain weakness in a status quo. The status quo is only as valuable as we can assume it didn't change. But to the extent that it does change, that is a weakness in a status quo, in a chazaka. Good? Okay. The Gemara adds by saying, it is possible the person can give the barrel to a guard to guard it. It's a little questionable why the Gemara needed to fill in that blank. Maybe it's giving the point that I made, that you know you give it to a shomer, and like what in the world is going to happen? He's going to make sure it doesn't break. And it doesn't break on its own, but you can give as many people or animals to a shomer as you want, and he cannot prevent them from dying. So that may be the point I was making, or may not be the point I was making.
Is breaking marriage not solar that death is not uncommon? Or sorry, that death is not common?
It is common.
Rebbe Meir himself never said either one. We just know his halacha. Abaye was the one that claimed Rebbe Meir holds that we're choshesh lanisa.
Because
he holds you can't use an animal for a wool, and that's what Abaye thinks, that's why he said that. We also know that if a husband gives a wife a get, or just say simply, if a husband leaves town, so a woman is allowed to eat truma if he leaves town, but the other brother of Mishnah says that if he gives her a get, that it's chal one moment before I die, and then he leaves town, or he leaves the house even, so we're choshesh right away, he might have died. So the Gemara assumes that those two halachas can't go together. One could have imagined a distinction, there's a difference between if he gives her a get, doesn't give her a get, like we can imagine other distinctions. The Gemara doesn't like those distinctions. The Gemara says, there is no distinction. Mamanavshach, if we're afraid that a guy's going to die, we should be afraid a guy's going to die whether he gave her a get or not. So how come we're not afraid that he's going to die when he normally leaves town, and when he gives her a get, suddenly we are? The answer is it's two different opinions. But we don't know who said what. One is Rabbi Meir, one is Rabbi Huda, one is Choshesh Misha, one is not Choshesh Misha. So for consistency's sake, we are suggesting that Rabbi Meir always holds we are Choshesh Lanisa. Therefore, in the case of the women, so he would say, once the husband leaves town, so then, sorry, we're Choshesh, he might have died, even though he didn't give her a get. So we don't have a proof that that's true, but what we do know is that those two cases, Abaye at least, claims that it all revolves around a concern for the eventuality of death. What we do know for sure is that Ramiro holds by the barrel that a person is allowed to be mafresh and then rely on Brera, so he's clearly not afraid that the barrel is going to break. So at least according to Abaye, that is a contradiction. So the more answers that we'll have to distinguish within Rabbi Meir between things which are more likely to happen and less likely to happen. Rabbi Meir thinks that it happens because it happens to everyone. Everyone dies. But barrels are not just going to break. You can give it to a guard and then he'll make sure it doesn't break. So therefore he is concerned for death, but he's not concerned for barrels breaking. Okay, but wait a minute. So now we've worked out a distinction in Rabbi Meir, but what about Rabbi Huda? Because we're saying now that Rabbi Huda holds we are not choshesh lemisa, which means we don't assume a guy's going to die, but we assume barrels break. If we're concerned for eventualities, so we're concerned for eventualities. If we're not concerned for eventualities, we shouldn't be concerned for eventualities. And if Rabbi Huda really thinks we're not concerned that people are going to die, and people do die, everyone dies, so then how come by a barrel, what does he say? Oh, it might break. But barrels don't just break. That doesn't make sense. You can distinguish there. That doesn't make sense. Kashi Rabbi Huda to Rabbi Huda. Now we have a contradiction in Rabbi Huda. Kashi Rabbi Huda to Rabbi Huda. Time would Rabbi Huda lav mishum the chayesh lebikias noid. Gemara says, okay, you have to say, the reason why Rabbi Huda held that you're not allowed to do this hafrasha thing and hope for the best later on, not because he was afraid it was going to break. Bikias anoid means the breaking of the container. So then why did he say you're not allowed to do that? Elamishum the les le bereira. It's because he doesn't hold you're allowed to do this to be determined thing. You're not allowed to rely on retroactive determination of object. Yeah? The to be determined thing, retroactive determination of object, bereira, you're not allowed to do. He says you're not allowed to do that. So you're not allowed to do it. L'chadchila. It's not a question of, oh, we're concerned you might not end up being mafresh. That's what we originally thought. It was a practical concern. No! It's a conceptual problem. You're not allowed to do that. Okay, so then we don't have a problem anymore, right? Because Rabbi Huda is not concerned for eventualities. He doesn't care concerned about death, and he's not going to say maybe the barrel will break. Just like he's not concerned that our person is going to die, he's also not concerned that the barrel is going to break. Well, then why can't you go ahead and do this with the hafrasha by the wine? What's the answer? Because he holds, we don't allow a person to just retroactively determine things. If you're going to be mafresh, you have to be mafresh now. You can't say, well, I'm being mafresh based on what I decide later is left over. No, it doesn't work that way. You're not allowed to do that. Really? Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned for that the barrel might break. But we've been hiding the sefer from you. But the sefer, the end of it says, Amru loyla Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda said to Rabbi Meir, you think you're allowed to separate it based on Breira later on. But Iata Moide, don't you agree? Shema Yivka Hanoid? It could be that the container will break. Venim says Shoyset Tavalim Limafreya. And it comes out that this guy drank Tevel retroactively. Wait a minute. But that's exactly what Rabbi Huda said back to Rabbi Meir. Where he says, you want to say the reason why Rabbi Huda said you're not allowed to do this Rabbi Meir Afrasha thing? It's because he says Breira doesn't work. You're not allowed to utilize Breira. But Rabbi Huda himself said back, we have this quoted. Rabbi Huda said back to Rabbi Meir, what do you mean I'm going to let him do that? Even if Breira works, but it could break. Why are you concerned for it breaking? So obviously Rabbi Huda was concerned for breaking. And Rabbi Meir said back to Rabbi Huda, L'kishivaka. No, let it break. Okay, that was just his way of saying, I don't care. When it breaks, we'll worry about it. You know what I mean? It didn't break. Okay, but Michlal, the implication is, B'chayesh Rabbi Huda l'b'kiyas anayit. That Rabbi Huda is concerned for the breaking of the container. Hasam Rabbi Huda hu, tekamar l'Rabbi Meir. There was Rabbi Huda that was saying to Rabbi Meir, L'didi, listen, Rabbi Meir, according to me, less Libreira. This whole thing doesn't work. Because there's no such thing as Breira, not allowed to do that. El-Lididach, but even according to you, Rabbi Meir, who does allow Breira to function and to rely on it, the Yesh Breira, where there is Breira, Iyatamoide, don't you agree, to Shem Yivka Anoid, that you should at least be concerned that maybe the barrel will break? I'm like Kishivaka, he says, no, let it break. So what just happened in the Gemara? The Gemara was saying, you want to say that Rabbi Yehuda, you want to get out of this problem of the contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is not Choshesh L'Nisa, but he is Choshesh for the breaking of the barrel. How does that make any sense? The Gemara says he's not concerned for the breaking of the barrel. The reason he doesn't allow you to do this thing with the barrel, you're separating it Erev Shabbos, is because he holds Breira doesn't work. You're not allowed to do that. Gemara says, that's not true. Because Rabbi Huda said to Rabbi Meir, aren't you worried that it's going to break? And so doesn't that reflect Rabbi Huda's worry that it's going to break? Gemara says, no. Sometimes when people are having a debate, this is good for you debaters out there, you don't have to debate someone based on your position. The strongest argument is, very nice, listen, I disagree with you for a million reasons, but let's accept all your rationale and all your reasons, you're still wrong. Right? That's the best argument you can make in a debate. I totally disagree with you because of this. But even if I didn't, even according to you, it doesn't make any sense because why aren't you nervous that it's going to break? And that's all Rabbi Huda is saying. So you can't tell me Rabbi Huda is actually concerned it's going to break. He's not concerned with the fact that it's going to break. He just doesn't allow Breira. The only reason he said this to Rabbi Meir was to attack Rabbi Meir as a knockout punch. Even according to you, you should at least be concerned it's going to break. And there Rabbi Meir says, no, let it break. I'm not worried about this. The way I explained it was because barrels don't just break on their own. And the way the Gemara said it was, you can give it to a shomer and he'll make sure it doesn't break. So then the Gemara finished by saying, are you sure Rabbi Huda is not concerned for Misa? But didn't we learn in a Mishnah, Rabbi Huda says, "Af isha cheres misakdin lai, we even prepare another wife for him." Oh boy, we don't like to talk about these things. We're going to say, huh? Let's say, you know what this is talking about? This is the first Mishnah in Yuma. First Mishnah Yuma says, the Kohen Gadol is getting ready.
Separate from his wife, and if, in case if she dies,
right,
they get her another wife.
Why?
Then he said, well, in case, because then he may become Tame.
That's why they keep him away.
Well,
why do we get him a backup wife?
Because in case
his wife dies.
He doesn't come, and he won't come back, or...
Because the pasuk says, "V'chaper ba'adoy ba'ad beisoy," he has to atone for himself and his household. So if his wife dies, he doesn't have a household. So that means that it doesn't work. He can't atone for himself or Klai. So now, oh, terrible, crazy. So Rabbi Huda holds, in order to avoid the possibility that his wife will die and that we can't fulfill the pasuk, that it'll atone for him and for his household, we make sure he has a household no matter what. Now, do you remember what the response in the Mishnah is? Do you remember what the Mishnah says back? Well then, aren't you going to need a backup for the backup?
Yeah,
there's
an ever-ending
logic. Three words. Ain, Ledavar, Sof. Ain, Ledavar, Sof. If that's your concern, there's no end to that train of thought. So it doesn't make sense. The Mishnah there seemingly rejects Rabbi Huda. But that is what Rabbi Huda says. Rabbi Huda says we make sure he's a backup wife because she might
die.
Oh, that hurts. That really hurts.
He's doing the same thing.
So Rabbi Huda obviously, clearly, is choshesh for what?
Misa.
Come on. You can't get out of that, right?
You're going to get out of it.
You think so? He's in big trouble. Oy. But lo chayish, Rabbi Huda lemisa. Rabbi Huda doesn't choshesh for death. We even make sure he's a backup wife. Shema tamus ishto. Lest. Right? Remember our conversation about lest? We don't want it to happen, but lest his wife die. Gemara answers, but we said on that Mishnah, Amar Rav Huna, Braid Rav Yoshua, Rav Huna, son of Rav Yoshua said, Ma'ale asu b'kapara, an extra level, ma'ale from up, an extra stringency they made when it came to kapara, the atonement for Klal Yisrael. Okay, this is... Okay, so in that case, even though it's usually not a concern, in this case, we don't play any games with the kapara of Klal Yisrael, so we make sure he's a backup wife. But in general, are we concerned that someone's going to die? Says Rabbi Huda. No.
Got out of it.
He got out of it. You believe it. Okay, so then the Gemara is going to get back to the issue of the animal wall. So we will come back to that next time.